And I'm Madeline Yond.
Today we have a special guest host. She's a fourth year at New College of Florida. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you.
So you go to New College of Florida, you're a fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
What are you studying?
So I study international development, but I have a specific focus right now with my thesis on ethnic tourism development in northeastern Brazil. So I'm specifically studying how Afro-Brazilian ethnic tourism is being used in the state of Bahia, which is a state in the northeast, and even more specifically, how state involvement is having an impact on ethnic identity and how the state of Brazil is also using Afro-Brazilian ethnic tourism as a model for regional development in Bahia.
Very interesting. Thank you so much. So how did you get started in Brazil, studying Brazil? How did that come about?
Right. Well, I did a lot of work before I was going. I actually went to study in Brazil last year, so spring of 2015. And before I left, I had always just found Brazil just something like a fascinating country that I always was studying. I was really focused on education policy before I went to Brazil. And then I had the opportunity to go abroad, so I went to the Northeast, and I went to three different states. I went to Ceará, I went to Pernambuco, and I went to Bahia. And those three states, you know, were really just amazing, beautiful places. Not the typical places that a tourist would go to, but I was doing research. So, you know, I did a research project in Bahia, in Pernambuco on a Afro-Brazilian nonprofit that was teaching identity through different forms of Afro-Brazilian dances, as well as song, music, types of arts and crafts. So I got really interested on how one actually teaches identity through different forms of art. And then it was really hard to study that, though. You know, statistically, how do you study identity through that? So what I found to do was I was going to study instead of studying identity through arts-related programming, I decided to study it through the lens of a tourism industry in northeastern Brazil and seeing how the tourism industry, which is based on lots of arts-related enterprises, and how the state is actually influencing Afro-Brazilian identity through these tourism ventures that they are promoting themselves. And of course, you know, Afro-Brazilians themselves are as well. It's a very profitable business to enter in, especially in the Northeast when there's not a whole lot of opportunities to do anything besides, you know, work in petroleum or agriculture. So tourism industry there is quite booming, and especially with the Olympics coming up. And we had the FIFA World Cup in 2014. There was a lot of development that has been going on to make these cities more, you know, quote unquote modern. So that has definitely had an influence on Afro-Brazilian identity as well as indigenous identities and just the plurality of multiculturalism that is in Brazil.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to WSR LP 96.5 FM and WBPV 100.1 LP FM Bradenton. And we have a show, we have an interesting show coming up for you today. A bit of a mix-up with the Peace and Justice Report. We're going to hear from them in a little bit. They have a snippet to play. But right now we're going to talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda. 2 weeks ago, Lin-Manuel Miranda and the rest of the cast of the hit Broadway show Hamilton headed to Washington, D.C. to freestyle for Obama, perform a number of songs from his hit Broadway show, and host an education symposium for high school students. Miranda also took advantage of the visit to D.C. to talk to the U.S. Senate and ask for help in favor of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is currently facing a budget shortage and impending default on its $78 billion debt. He spoke about the effect of the financial crisis and how it has caused some of the special places that formed his childhood to close. He even joked about giving the senators hard-to-score Hamilton tickets in exchange for aiding Puerto Rico. We face a financial crisis, triple anything that you're experiencing here in the United States, and it's a solvable, fixable crisis, he says. What we really need is help. On March 28th, the New York Times published Miranda's op-ed titled, Give Puerto Rico Its Chance to Thrive. He started his piece by citing Alexander Hamilton's 1772 plea for hurricane-ravaged St. Croix. Miranda was also recently named one of the world's greatest leaders. And moving on to a similar topic, Madeline knows a little bit about it, Brazil. With Brazil facing a socioeconomic crisis, even the upcoming Olympics can't provide revenue. Brazil has resorted to buying up tickets to the Olympic Games and giving them away to children after a majority of the tickets remain unsold just 4 months from the event. Ricardo Lacer, who has recently been appointed as Brazil's Minister of Sport, says that he is now working on a plan to boost purchases. There are many worries plaguing the country, drawing attention and resources away from the Olympics. Current President Dilma Rousseff is fighting for her political life amid a deep recession, impeachment proceedings, mass protests, and a corruption scandal in which the once high-flying Lula, her predecessor and mentor, faced charges. A bruising recession has forced deep cuts to the Olympic budget, with everything from security to the opening ceremony and even facilities for athletes in the Olympic Village having to make do with less. A national outbreak of Zika has also sparked numerous travel warnings. The games will be held, but after so much instability, they aren't making news, and the commercial consequences of that are very serious, says Katia Rubio, a professor in the physical education department at the University of Sao Paulo. Sponsors are still traumatized by the unrest that rocked Brazil in 2013 during the Confederations Cup. During that summer, a million people flooded the streets, demanding better schools, hospitals, and public transportation, and criticizing the billions of dollars spent on the tournament. Now, mass protests have erupted again with a different cause, forcing Rousseff from office. Last week, Nike canceled the unveiling of its new Brazil national football team kit in light of angry demonstrations against Rousseff's controversial move to name Lula her chief of staff. There's a lot of factors affecting the people of Brazil and the Olympic Games. The only thing to do is wait and see how the political unrest will play out and how this will affect the overall climate of the country. Brazil is living in an excellent moment. We have worked hard in recent decades. We have an organized and powerful economy, says ex-president Lula in those heady days of an emerging market boom that has now gone bust. Rio is ready, and those who have given us this opportunity, we will not regret it. Will not regret it.
Yeah. Just to comment on that, Brazil has a long, long history of placing infrastructure projects in front of, hospital building, building new hospitals or improving their education programs. And with that, it kind of points to, Brazil's trying to get a developed status. Right now, they're still considered a developing country. In many ways, they are not, but they still have that classification. So with these big mega events, such as the Olympics and the World Cup, and even smaller, national football events, what the country is seeing is, yes, these are important, and these are part of, the national culture to have soccer, but that's not all that they are. And that just focusing on, infrastructure, let's build, new stadiums, is not really healing the country of its socioeconomic ills. For example, when I went to Recife, which is the capital of Pernambuco, there was a stadium there that was built for the FIFA World Cup. And, my host family there was talking to me about, immediately after the World Cup, the economy of that city just completely was in, upheaval, really. There was so much expectation that the FIFA World Cup would bring in so much new revenue, would really help them reach a developed status, would help with their economic stability. But in reality, it brought in a lot of vendors immediately, brought in a lot of, new people who moved quickly for the games. And then immediately after the games, everything was shut down. Those stadiums are very, they're not really used a whole lot. And so a lot of citizens are angry that that money wasn't actually used to help with their more socioeconomic problems more directly. It does seem that, Brazil does focus on infrastructure and, building new roads and new things instead of, directly investing in education programs, which, are definitely could always be better there. So,
yeah. Next up, we have a song, A Carne, by Elsa Suarez. Elsa Suarez was born in Rio de Janeiro, favela, in the 1930s and rose to fame when she won a radio competition in her teens. She shook the bossa nova world with her 1961 record Bossa Negra by swapping out the typical smoothness of the genre with raspy tones and improv scatting. Her unique voice garnered the attention of Louis Armstrong, who famously referred to her as his daughter the first time they met at the 1962 World Cup, speaking of the World Cup in Brazil. Her mainstream visibility and outspoken pride for her Afro-Brazilian roots landed her on the Brazilian dictatorship's blacklist. Her house was violently fired at and seized by militants, and she was forced into exile in Italy. Upon her return to Brazil in the 1980s, she channeled all her struggles into her brand of soulful samba rock, all while tackling Brazil's racial injustices. In her 2002 song, A Carne, Suarez stands up against racism with a chorus that cries, "The cheapest meat in the market is dark meat." This is A Carne by Elsa Suarez. Enjoy.
Que vai de graça pro presídio e para de barra. chorando, porque o revólver já está engatilhado. E o Vingador é lento, mas muito bem intencionado. E esse país vai deixando todo mundo preto. Passado da cor, brigar sutilmente por respeito, brigar bravamente por respeito, brigar por justiça e por respeito.
Pode acreditar.
De algum antepassado da cor, brigar, 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 brigar.
Liga aí.
So that song actually speaks to a lot of fear about, you know, identifying as Afro-Brazilian and Black within the country's desire to come to be a democracy. Even in, you know, the song was in, what was it, 1961?
Yeah.
But, you know, she was born in the 1930s, which was the start of Getúlio Vargas's dictatorship. And a big thing in his dictatorship was that in trying to create a more nationalist or a national identity in Brazil, he incorporated a lot of Afro-Brazilian arts and, you know, music and popular folk stylings into national identity. However, that didn't really translate to acceptance of, you know, Black and brown people, and especially, you know, even indigenous people as well. So there was a lot of fear of even identifying as Afro-Brazilian. In fact, for a while, if you identified as Afro-Brazilian, if you spoke out against racial injustice, that was, you know, that was reason enough for you to be exiled. And that actually happened a lot in universities. You know, professors of Afro-Brazilian anything, or, you know, if you were one of the members of the United Black Movement in Brazil, you were under, you know, threat of being exiled or tortured or even death. Brazil, you know, really tried to promote even the 1950s and 1960s, and still to even today, they're a post-racial nation. So that was seen as a threat. You know, speaking even about your own specific Afro-Brazilian identity, you're saying that you are systematically oppressed was seen as something that was contrary to this national image of, you know, post-racialness and unity. In fact, in 1950s, UNESCO did a research project there. Because Brazil had just promoted itself so, you know, so much as this racial paradise, they wanted to say, oh my gosh, you know, what is Brazil doing that the rest of the country isn't doing? And especially in the wake of World War II, how can we, you know, unite a country, or how can we have a country that's so, you know, pluralistic such as Brazil? So they actually went there and they were like, uh-oh, you know, actually Brazil is not this, does not have this racial harmony, does not have this post-racialness that it really says that it does. And Black people are systematically oppressed and have lower life chances than, you know, white people, which was, you know, never in the majority, but a lot of people actually were so conditioned to not identify as Afro-Brazilian. We're you know, taught to not identify as Black, that for a while, most people were identifying as white, or trying to identify as white, even in the census demographics. And actually in 2010 is the first time that Afro-Brazilians outnumbered the white population according to census tracts. And a large part of that is people believe that because there are now Afro-Brazilian, what is it called? affirmative action programs in universities and in political parties, that is actually encouraging more people to start identifying as Afro-Brazilian. And there is a new movement that is happening in Brazil to really affirm not just Afro-Brazilian identity, which is more of an ethnic identity, but a Black identity, which is more racialized. So that's very hard to convince, you know, politicians, especially, that Brazil is post-racial even today. So it's very hard to do that, especially when it's, oh, we're just all Brazilians. You know, some people claim that there is no actual race in Brazil. So for her to be saying that, you know, Black is, Black is the cheapest meat in the market really reflects that time, and especially how people identify themselves as, you know, Black or as white, and the kind of controversy that revolved around that.
Yes, excellent. Well put, yeah. That race is something that's very differently perceived in Latin America than the United States. The United States has a very long history of, you know, racial issues. I feel like people in the U.S., and this goes back to the goal of the show, is connecting Latin American issues with people in the U.S. and understanding that we're not as different as you think we are, and it's worse in many other parts of the world than it is here. And it's, you know, it's about recognizing that, understanding that, and being able to speak out against it and discuss it and just have, you know, knowledge about it. All right, so moving on to the Colombian government and rebels from the National Liberation Army, ELN, the country's second largest left-wing rebel group after the FARC, announced that they will be holding official peace talks. This declaration comes shortly after Colombian government and FARC negotiators in Havana missed their March 23rd deadline to reach a peace deal. Although both sides have expressed their commitment to come to an agreement, they still disagree on some key issues. The ELN has been engaging in exploratory talks with the government for more than a year, but throughout that time maintained offensive tactics such as kidnapping and bombing oil pipelines along the Venezuelan border. The recent kidnappings of government and military officials have prompted the President Juan Manuel Santos to caution the group against missing the peace train. The ELN was founded in 1964 by Marxist Jesuit priest and supporter of liberation theology, Camilo Torres. With an estimated 2,000 active fighters, they focused their attacks on large landowners, international companies, and oil pipelines to highlight their conviction that natural resources should be collectively owned by the Colombian people rather than by foreign multinationals. President Santos is expressing optimism by stating that if we can make peace, it will be the end of guerrilla fighters in Colombia and thus in Latin America. Many are hopeful that the new set of talks could help to end the more than 50-year-long civil war that has claimed the lives of more than 200,000 people and displaced millions. Yet critics say that the negotiations with guerrilla groups won't necessarily lead to peace, as right-wing paramilitary groups and government forces continue to commit violence throughout the country. Also, we're going to comment on Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro's response to President Obama's visit to Cuba. Fidel Castro slammed President Obama's recent visit to Cuba and warned his countrymen to beware of Washington's sweet talk as both the U.S. and Cuba head down an uncertain path toward improved relations. He published a column in Granma, the newspaper of the Cuban Communist Party, decrying Obama's call to set aside the country's decades of animosity and look to a common future as neighbors. One assumes that each of us runs the risk of a heart attack hearing these words from a U.S. president, Castro wrote. We don't need the empire to gift us anything, he added. Obama was the first U.S. head of state to visit Cuba in 88 years in the hopes that the visit will help spark social and economic reform in the communist country. In a speech during the visit, Obama called for change to meet aspirations of Cuba's youth. Fidel Castro, the former Cuban president, rarely appears in public but occasionally publishes columns in state media called Fidel's Reflections, offering insight into his thoughts on the changes sweeping Cuba under his brother Raul Castro. Analysts say that Castro's commentary offers a look into the conservative elements within Cuba's Communist Party that have been resistant to economic and political change. Although there are groups who think in line with Castro's rebuke, his views are seen as out of touch with desires of most Cubans who are seeking change. He's essentially an old man ranting in the background, Sebastian A. Arcos, associate director of the Cuban Research Institute at Florida International University, says. It's rambling, it's incoherent, it's definitely not on topic. Castro's critical tone in Monday's letter is likely to bolster Raul Castro's reputation as the pragmatic reformer taking Cuba onto a new path. The brothers have crafted different roles for the international community. Fidel is the bad cop and Raul is the good cop, says Sebastian Arcos. We have a song by Daime Arocena called Drama. Daime Arocena busted out into the Cuban music scene with release of her 2015 EP titled Nueva Era, which positioned her as a crucial artist in the increasingly accessible U.S.-Cuban musical exchange. With her deep voice and strong jazz background, she has crafted a Santeria-inspired neo-soul sound, fusing together jazzy riffs with Afro-Cuban percussion. She also has a strong voice about U.S.-Cuba relations and how music plays a big role in that. What I wish for the most is more openness, information, and freedom of expression, especially in music. Cuban musicians are 50 to 60 years behind, not because of creation, but because of visibility. Everyone is still into Buena Vista Social Club, who I love and respect, but so many things have happened in Cuba, so much creation. Cuba is a musical country. This is Drama by Daime Arocena. Enjoy.
La paz murió. Al fin miré lo, mi luz, tu sol.
That was Drama by Daime Arocena. Thank you for listening. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota, WBPV 100.1 LP FM. And thank you all for bearing with me. This is actually my first time working the board alone. So it's going pretty well, I'd say.
You did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Madeline. Madeline's also doing a very good job. This is her first time on air ever, so she's
I'm a little nervous.
She's doing excellently.
Thank you.
All right, next we have a story from Remezcla, which is a source we use often. Quick shout out to their website, remezcla.com. They're very good reporters, and they focus a lot on the young Latin American population in the U.S. and their connections with their home countries and how we make a difference in the United States. Remezcla, so this one's for them. Remezcla asked three young Latinos or Latinas, Latinxes, why they support Bernie Sanders. People of all different backgrounds gathered in St. Mary's Park in the South Bronx on Thursday to show support for Democratic presidential primary candidate Bernie Sanders. The diversity displayed with people of color making up the majority of the 18,500 people strong crowd challenged the Bernie Bros narrative, the idea that has permeated much of media conversation surrounding the candidate and his white cis male supporters. This conversation has led to the hashtag Bernie Made Me White rebuttal on social media, started by an American writer living in Japan who was fed up with the media suggesting that Sanders is only winning with the whites. Sanders is winning the young Latina vote 2-1, according to a recent report from NPR, and it also has majority support among young black voters. Remezcla reporters attended the event in the South Bronx to talk to supporters and shed a light on a campaign that has not received the mainstream media coverage it deserves. One attendee's poster read, "Hey CNN, are you seeing this?" Rosario Dawson, who has been on the campaign trail with Bernie, also referenced the media blackout claim in her speech, citing Trump's $1.9 billion of free media coverage compared to Sanders' $321 million. Although the entire crowd could not get into the park where the speeches took place, the overflow spilled into an adjacent baseball field where there were big screens and speakers broadcasting the speeches. In his main speech, Sanders went on to talk about the tenets of his political platform, which include access to free and quality public education, healthcare, affordable housing, the removal of marijuana from the federal list of dangerous drugs, and the elimination of privately owned prisons, among many other points. The Bernie chants were constant throughout the night, and "Si se puede" was one of them. "I found out about him over the summer and told my parents, and now they're voting for him. I can't vote, though. I like how he's very direct and straightforward about climate change. The other ones try to please everybody. There was a question about fracking where Hillary gave this long answer, and he just said no," said Jacinta Bujanda, 14 years old, from Washington Heights. "First and foremost, Bernie is very moral. Same as the way I felt when I went for Obama. I sense it. I feel it. Bernie has no grip attached to him. Bernie is very original, and there's nothing to doubt when you can see what he's all about," said Edwin Cuevas, 27 years old, from the South Bronx. The last quote is from Ingrid Morales, 23 years old, from Los Angeles, and she said, "I'm hoping to hear more of Bernie Sanders' ideas about immigration reform and see where I stand after that. It affects my family, my friends, my neighbors. It's an issue that affects all of the United States, and there's many people living in the shadows that we need to change that. We can't live on forever like this." Again, that was Ingrid Morales, 23 years old, from Los Angeles. And I think you can tell by the wide variety of opinions, young Latinx voters, all very different reasons why they're voting for Bernie Sanders, very valid reasons, and reasons that resonate strongly with the young Latin American community in the United States, like being able to live a life free of worry of deportation. And if you're a dreamer, then free of worry that your parents will be deported. And you know, there's a lot of really sad stories of things like that happening. And even the idea of free healthcare, public education that's quality enough. You know, these are things that should not be looked over and are not being looked over by the young Latin American voters, which is another reason why the media needs to recognize that we're here and we're supporting Bernie, and no matter how much, you know, attention the other side gets, there's still a lot of positive attention that needs to be drawn to candidates like Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even when it's young people that are supporting a political candidate, it's always so important that everybody is being represented, and everybody is, you know, not just being represented, but there's media attention covering who is being representing that political candidate. So that way, disenfranchisement is less likely to occur. And political disenfranchisement doesn't just mean, you know, voting and voting rights like that, but also just representation on, you know, the media platform as well. So it's incredible that, you know, we're really seeing such a dedicated, you know, young, youthful, you know, force that's backing Bernie Sanders. And it's not just, you know, the Bernie bros. And it's so important to point out.
Next up, we have a story, kind of a fun story, a hopeful one. 33-year-old Uruguayan referee Claudia Umpierrez has just become the first woman in history to take charge of a first division football match in Uruguay. And if you know anything about me, if you've been listening to the show, I am the biggest soccer football fan ever, and this just gives me hope for a future career as a referee. You know, if I can't play, at least I'd be able to referee. This feat was difficult, and at times she felt like giving up, she reveals in an interview with FIFA.com. The first time was in 2008. I'd been in the fourth division for 4 years, and I felt a bit bogged down in terms of how the instructors viewed me. Claudia started in 2002 refereeing to make money for law school. She had been born into a family of football lovers, and as early as age 16, she knew she wanted to follow in her grandfather and aunt's footsteps. Of the 12 women who took part in the refereeing course in 2002, Umpierrez was one of three women to complete it. After spending 4 years in the 4th Division Football League, she's finally called up to the 3rd Division in 2009, and then in just a year, she was moved to the 2nd tier teams. At this time, she was appointed a FIFA international referee, officiating the South American Under-20 World Championship and Women's Copa Libertadores competitions as well. Finally, in 2015, she got her big break and was called to referee in Canada for the Women's World Cup. I've never performed in front of 54,000 people before. I came away from Canada all the stronger and ready to do what I'm doing now. She's now honing her craft at the highest level in her home country with the love and support of her family in the stands. It's a great story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I hope to see her refereeing some high-profile matches soon. That'd be really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And next song is up by a rapper I recently discovered named Mike Towers. Mike Towers is a Puerto Rican rapper that was born January 15th, 1994, in Rio Piedras, same place my dad is from, actually. After appearing in Remezcla's Trilligan's Island documentary in 2014, he has had a whirlwind 2 years. He has received co-signs from DJ Khaled, Major Key, recorded in New York, and has established close ties to French Montana and his crew. Wow. Prestigious. Now that his self-proclaimed rookie season is over, he has dropped his first mixtape, El Final del Principio, or The End of the Beginning. With his New York-style grit and good old-fashioned Boricua street smarts, he is poised to become a major player in the Puerto Rican hip-hop game. This is Déjate Ver by Mike Towers.
Tienes que saber que si me hablan de ti hacen que la mente se me revuelque. Por más que te saco vuelves a meterte. Déjate ver porque llevo tiempo sin verte. Y a este dile que te sueltes. Más cuando es por mí a ti nadie puede detenerte. Metió su corazón en una caja fuerte. Me dijo que era de las pocas que acostumbra a guardar secretos hasta la muerte. iPhone no usa HTC, lo que quiere es THC. Quiere que le dé y yo no sé, porque después va a querer más, yo lo sé. Por eso me hago el ciego, José. Pero lo sé bien, y ella luce bien, y me seduce riéndose. Conmigo no está fingiéndose, lo que le gusta y no está haciéndose. No lo niego, yo también gocé. Trato de no ser grosero, sé cómo le gusta que le hablen. Y sé lo que está haciendo para evitar los celos. Me hice un trato el cual yo no cancelo. Tienes que saber que si me hablan de ti hacen que la mente se me revuelque. Por por más que te saco, vuelves a meterte. Déjate ver porque llevo tiempo sin verte. Y a este, dile que te sueltes. Más cuando es por mí, a ti nadie puede detenerte. Metió su corazón en una caja fuerte. Me dijo que era de las pocas que acostumbra a guardar secretos hasta la muerte. No hay furia, sino euforia. Después de aquí tenemos mala memoria. No le cuentes a nadie de la historia de Calvin y Victoria. La tienen probatoria, pero puse el pestillo y no hay escapatoria. Su posición la quiero obligatoria, eres la musa de mi trayectoria. Tienes que saberlo, le dijo a su amiga, estoy loca por verlo. Pero es que a este no sé cómo distraerlo. A mí me gusta ella porque se le marca el abdomen sin contraerlo. Va al gym pero le aburre la rutina, le gusta lo natural, no la nicotina. Si no me dejo ver, se amotina, espérame en la esquina. Me llama siempre que llueve, no sé lo que le hace el clima. Me huele a que habrán inundaciones repentinas. Tienes que saber que si me hablan de ti hacen que la mente se me revuelque. Por más que te saco vuelves a meterte. Déjate ver porque llevo tiempo sin verte. Y a este dile que te sueltes. Más cuando es por mí, a ti nadie puede detenerte. Metió su corazón en una caja fuerte. Me dijo que era de las pocas que acostumbra a guardar secretos hasta la muerte.
Dejate Ver by Mike Towers. Now we have a PSA from our lovely guest co-host, Madeline. Here she goes. Look at her go. Look at her go. She's going to say a PSA. Go ahead.
All right. Well, New College of Florida will be hosting its first ever TEDx New College of Florida on April 16th, 2016 from 6 to 10 p.m. It will be held in the Sudikoff Conference Center. TEDx New College of Florida aims to showcase uniquely brilliant students within and surrounding the New College community. The event theme is The Art of Technology, which explores a new conception of artistry and what is possible when imagination and technology collide. TEDx New College hopes to bring in the Sarasota community to experience this inaugural event. TEDxNewCollegeOfFlorida.com for more information.
And just a quick little update on the tinnitus support group. Do you suffer from ringing in the ears? The Sarasota Tinnitus Support group meets monthly on the third Friday afternoon each month from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Silverstein Institute, 1901 Floyd Street, second floor in Sarasota. The group provides helpful information for men and women living with the upsetting problem of noises within their ears. There are no membership fees or obligations. Meetings are open to the public. For more information, call Carmen at 387-7116. I'm assuming that is 941-387-7116. The next meeting will be on March 18th. The next meeting will occur soon. Thank you, everybody. Anyway, moving on. We have kind of an all-encompassing story of Latin American countries as a whole and the general libertarian movement that has been sweeping South America. Latin Americans have grown tired of years of populism and socialism and have begun to demand changes in their respective countries. A great example would be Argentina and the victory of Mauricio Macri in last year's presidential election that ends years of leftist government at the hands of Kirchner. Kirchner failed to manage the once powerful economy, and this led Argentines to vote for a market system. This new president wasted no time immediately implementing pro-market measures, reducing taxes, eliminating currency controls, naming a new president for the central bank, and negotiating foreign debt payments. The gradual movement to the right is also the case in Venezuela, where for the first time in 17 years, the National Assembly has a majority of the opposition, removing the Socialist Party control of the legislative branch. A lot of Venezuelans are starting to realize how detrimental socialism has been for their country. Venezuela has the potential to be the most economically powerful nation in Latin America due to their high oil production. But instead, they are facing shortages, corruption, crime, drug trafficking, and the highest inflation rate in the hemisphere. As mentioned earlier on the show, Brazil is also in a transitional phase politically. Millions of angry Brazilians have taken to the streets in recent months, demanding the resignation of President Dilma Rousseff. The Brazilian Congress is ready to start the impeachment proceedings against the president in the coming weeks. Nowadays, Brazil's main topic in the scandal at the state oil company Petrobras, which involves President Rousseff and her predecessor Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. We actually spoke about that specific instance, Petrobras, previously on the show, maybe two or three shows ago. Both Rousseff and Lula da Silva are part of the socialist bloc that has ruled in South America for the past decade and a half. Though reforms are still in an early stage, the fact that pro-market ideas and economic liberalism are starting to be seen as real, strong crisis alternatives, both economically and socially, is a big step, especially when historically solvent countries like the United States continue to debate whether they should tilt to the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with these impeachment proceedings, President Dilma has really been indicted for, you know, causing a lot of the social upheaval that we're seeing in Brazil. And also Lula, her predecessor, the president, you know, before, was a very popular, very, very popular president, possibly, I think, you know, one of the most popular presidents that they've had since the democratic transition in 1988 was when they, you know, formalized it with their constitution. So, you know, to have Dilma and Lula implicated in a, you know, government scandal is actually very huge. And, you know, some people are taking it hard, especially since Lula was so beloved that he could be involved in Petrobras. But some are arguing that Dilma is, you know, trying to get Lula as her chief of staff as a way to protecting him from having to go to their national courts to be indicted for his involvement with Petrobras, because as a head of state, or if you work in the I think it's if you work as a chief of staff or if you work within a high position in the federal government, you're not you don't have to normally go to like the normal court system. There is another, you know, form of getting going through a trial, but by having him as her chief of staff, he might not have to even, you know, go through any trials, because it's so difficult to put a political candidate through trials in Brazil in general. So some people are seeing that as her way of protecting him. And just some people are also very angry with Lula and say that, you know, well, he's, you know, changed just like everyone else and has been, you know, part of the Petrobras scandal, like so many other senators, political leaders in Brazil. So it's not just, you know, Lula, it's not just Dilma. There are so many other people that are also involved in the scandal. And it's really important to pay attention to those people too, because those, you know, they don't necessarily create more change and they don't have necessarily more influence. But by not paying attention to those people who are also involved in this Petrobras scandal, you know, we're not really getting the full picture of how deep scandal and corruption does go in Brazil.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. It's really great insight. And I have to just say, after listening to Madeline speak, I'm just very happy she's here right now. She's very knowledgeable. And it's just, I want you all to know also that this was not prepared. She's speaking off the top of her head, which is very impressive. Yeah. Anyway, we have coming up the activist agenda. I would also like to give a quick shout out to the people over at the Peace and Justice Report who very kindly let us have our show this morning, even though there was a mix-up in schedules. This is their activist report. I'm going to play it for you now. Listen closely.
It's time for this week's activist calendar. On Monday, April 4th, there will be a Democracy Awakening organizing meeting at 6 p.m. at the Fogartyville Community Media and Arts Center. This meeting will be to plan for an action to take place on Friday, April 15th. in support of the national action taking place in Washington, D.C., calling for the overturning of Citizens United and the restoration of provisions of the Voting Rights Act that were gutted by a Supreme Court decision last year. The Nation Group of Sarasota Manatee will hold their monthly meeting from 10 a.m. until noon on April 7th, that's Thursday, at the Selby Library. The Tropical Fruit Society of Sarasota will hold their annual fruit tree sale at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota on Saturday, April 9th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. On Monday, April 11th, the Sarasota County Council of Neighborhood Associations will hold a candidate forum. The forum will feature candidates running for the State House of Representatives, District 72 and District 73. Candidates Ed James III, Alexandra Miller, James T. Golden, Joe Gruters, and Steve Verner have all been invited to attend. The Sarasota chapter of the Brady Campaign for the Prevention of Gun Violence will hold a rally for gun safety outside the federal building on Thursday, April 7th from 4 to 5 p.m. Singer-songwriter Mindy Simmons will be participating, and there will be area speakers for the cause, including candidate Brent King. For more information on that event, you can email nadaevans@comcast.net. That's N-A-D-A-E-V-A-N-S @comcast.net. On Tuesday, April 12th, the Sarasota Manatee Chapter of Americans United for Separation of Church and State will present Backlash, What Happened to Equality, with Ken Sheelan, the co-chair of Equality Florida. This event will take place at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Sarasota and is free and open to the public. And that takes place at 7 p.m. The Manatee Sarasota Sierra Club holds their general monthly meeting on Thursday, April 14th at the Sarasota Garden Club. This month, the meeting will feature David Sadkin, Director of Education at the Wildlife Education and Rehabilitation Center. David will be talking about the unique adaptations of owls that make them the perfect predator. He will also discuss the impact growth and human interaction have on our wildlife population. The Finding a Path to Peace series continues on Sunday, April 17th at 6 p.m. at the Fogartyville Community Media and Arts Center. This month's event will be a film screening of the film Roadmap to Apartheid. That wraps it up for this week's Activist Calendar. If you have items to submit to the Activist Calendar, please email them to peacenter@gmail.com.
That was the Activist Calendar. Thank you again to the Peace and Justice Report. So that was basically our show today. We're just going to... We have a special PSA.
Oh, yes.
Madeline has a PSA she'd like to...
Oh, yes. So, what is this? Chocolates and papers. Isso é para a mãe de Paula. Ela te ama muito. E ela está esperando que você está bem. E ela está muito orgulhosa de você, que, porque você está entendendo português e aprendendo português muito bem. So basically,
rough
translation. Rough translation. Well, Portuguese is on point today, but basically, she loves you very much. I'm talking to Paula's mom, of course. Paula's mom, I just was letting you know that she loves you very much, and she's very Paula's very proud of you that you're learning Portuguese and that you're understanding Portuguese, and yeah, and she hopes that you're well.
Wow, that was very nice, Madeline. Very a surprise, unprompted. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening and continued support of the Florida Caribe Show. Again, this is WSLR LP 96.5 FM. Also, a great shout-out to my co-host, Gigi. You're with us. You're not here, but you're with us.
I hope your doctor's appointment's going well.
I hope it's going really well. thank you again, Madeline. Again, excellent job. Can we have a round of applause for Madeline, everyone in the room?
Yay!
Yeah.
Yay me!
also, everyone listening, Mom just texted me that she loves me. Anyway, this was the Florida Caribe Show. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you in a bit.
Bye.
See you later.
palma, el marabú y el jiquí, donde me siento mejor, tierra donde yo nací. Después de muchos años, yo le sigo dando amor.
En mi campiña yo soy feliz. Con mi guajira vivo yo aquí. En mi campiña yo soy feliz. Con mi guajira vivo yo aquí.
Ponle sabor.
Listening to WSLR 96.5 LPFM, Sarah.